Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 58 of the Crick Picks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. To my right is Estelle Vasudevan, who you can find at Estelle_Vasude, the number one on Twitter. And to my left, as always, we've got Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. And just a quick briefing on the Crick Picks podcast, if you were a first-time watcher. What we do over here is that we take any generic cricket category and we draft our top five each for that category in a snake-style draft competition, which basically means that the pick order is 1-2-3, 3-2-1. And the category for this particular week is best test batters to average under 50. I'm quite excited about this one. And Estelle, you have first picks, which I am really looking forward to because you are a first pick legend on Crick Picks.
Oh my God, this could be anything.
Yes, yeah. And I'm
Roy Dias.
I am not at all convinced with my first pick.
Okay. Even better. That's the, you couldn't have said anything better to start this than that phrase.
Yeah. So I will go with Hashim Amla as my first pick.
All right. Interesting.
He's averaging 46.64. He was part of one of the, you know, the golden era of South African Test cricket, one of the leading players during that period of time. And if you look at his record, he's got a great record in Australia, England, India, which are some of the tougher places to bat as a you know, overseas batter, right? So I feel like, I don't know, honestly, like I can't tell you that he is the best batter, but I'm picking him as number one because he's got a great record and he kind of, I think, should be in the top five at least.
I mean, I had him on my list. Yeah, actually, same. I had him 12th as well. It's crazy. Look, he was going to make the top 15, no doubts about it, because he's got, 9,282 runs. He's played 124 test
Can
matches.
Can we ban Estelle from going first, though? Like, is this a conversation we should be having?
Please do that.
Yeah. Also, Amla does have 28 tons, which is the second most for South Africa. But seriously, first pick, though? He would have made it. You could have taken him as your fifth pick.
I told you, I wasn't convinced.
The mighty Hash. The best batter to average under 50 in Test history.
Didn't see that one coming. Okay. I'm going to go with the obvious choice here. And Behram has told us before we're recording that he's written this down. So on 3-2-1, I will say the person and you can show your piece of paper and we'll see if we're right. Three, two, one. WG Grace.
There you go.
We go.
There it
I
is.
Wasn't sure if you might have got someone else. I wasn't if you were thinking perhaps someone else. But WG Grace, didn't average very much at all. But in his era, was an absolute god. And we didn't even see the best of him in Test cricket. I think if you – I based a lot of this on my book and where I had players on the book. And he was so dominant in the 1880s when – before the wickets had changed.
Yeah.
Right? He was so dominant in the old style. And then he's still a really good, like an above average batter in the 1890s when he's in his 40s. I think he played his last test at like 49 or something. And he's still an above average test player at that stage. Right? So what would he have been like if he played in his 20s rather than starting his career in his 30s? And for me, it's not even a conversation. He's the obvious number one pick. I mean, outside of Hashim Amla.
Well, two very fantastic beards already this list and one doctor in WG Grace. And like Jared said, you know, uncovered wickets when he scored those runs. His test average was 32, but he played 870 first class games and that average bumps up to 39. Also, this is a guy who didn't even want to play test cricket, right? He wanted to play amateur cricket.
Interested.
Yeah, because he could earn more money over there. But still, you know, 1,098 runs is still something. Enough tests, I suppose. 32 to be exact.
It's a lot of tests for his period.
That is true.
And especially for someone who didn't always make himself available because he didn't. You got to remember, test cricket wasn't the most important format of the game at that stage. So he wasn't thinking about it that way. You know, and if you have a look, so if you look at the average of 32, there's a game where I think England are chasing 87. And he makes like 37 of them, right? Like he really was just a completely different player. I should say they didn't make the 87 either. They lost that game. He made most of the runs in that chase. He was just a complete level apart from any other batter at that stage for a good 10 to 15 years of test cricket.
Also, what's amazing over here is that Hashim Amla is supposed to be the saint-like figure and WG Grace is a bit of an asshat who is one of cricket's biggest bastards. And Harshim Amla averages under 47, so I don't know, 46 point something. And WG Grace averages 32. So you would assume that the first few picks would be like 49ers, but they haven't been. And that's been very, very interesting. But anyway, I'm glad that I've gotten third pick over here because both of the players that I want to pick are on the table. And I'm just going to go ahead and take them. It's not the Indian superstar that you think I might pick. I will give you guys this bit of spoiler. My first pick is Mahela Jayawardene.
Sanjay Mendrekar.
No. It's Mahela. Mahela Jayawardene is averaging 49.84 in 149 test matches, and he has 11,814 runs. So if you actually open the 10,000 club list, he's like the guy who averages the most, but still less under 50, you know, and he has, you know, nearly 12,000 runs, 34 hundreds to his name as well. And I think probably why his record, or he didn't end up with a 50 plus average, is because the start of his career wasn't as good. He became much, much better later on. So that probably like kind of damages his overall record a bit, I suppose.
Yep. I mean, he doesn't make a lot of runs outside of Asia.
Yeah.
It's still a lot of runs though.
But it's a lot of runs in Asia. Like, it's a phenomenal amount of runs in Asia. I think I had him, where did I say Amla was? So he's about 10th on my list.
Okay, interesting. So I think my metric over here was, the one that I was looking more closely at was, how close to 50 can I get? And that's probably what's dictated my first two picks. So pick number two for me is Inzi. 8,830 runs in 120 test matches at 49.6. And he played this one test match for the World 11 in 2005 versus Australia, in which he scored one run in two innings. So that's the only reason why he doesn't average 50 plus in his career. Because he does average 50 plus for Pakistan, but overall it's 49.6. And that's why I've gone for him.
And he didn't want to play in that game, did he? He purposely didn't try in that game. Like, he wasn't the only one. There was a few of them in that World 11 who were just like, what are we doing here? So yeah, I have him rated ahead of Mahela Jayawardene. I think he's a better player, all things considered, than Mahela. I think they're both fantastic. I don't think there's a lot between the two of them, but I think based on everything we know, Inzamam is a no questions great test match batter. And I think Mahela, there's just a couple of extra questions.
Fair. Anyway, that's my two picks done, which brings us back to Jared.
This is easy then. I'll just take Virat Kohli. Virat Kohli, in any other era, averages over 50. He just happened to get Indian pitches and the wobble ball come on at his... Even if it was just one or the other, he probably still averages 48, 49, 50. But for peaks, you know, of all the players we put on here now, he probably, even compared to Grace, might have the best peak period of just absolute dominance for a long period of time. Virat Kohli, easy one for me.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm kind of thinking I should have gone for Virat over Mahela after all of this discourse. Because, look, he scored 9,200, or still, like, currently is playing and has 9,230 runs. He's played 123 test matches. He's averaging 46.85, but for the longest time, he was averaging over 50, right? As Jared said, you know, ranked earners are in India, and then the pace-playing pandemic has kind of hampered his test match average. And who's to say where it ends up? Who's to say he plays another test again? We don't know these things.
To get to 10,000 runs, he might need to play another 4 years at this rate. But
yeah, let's see anyway.
He's not making a lot of runs at the moment, but I just think he's an automatic one for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, he would have been my next pick as well, because, you know, and he doesn't have those question marks over like where he scored his runs either, right? Like he's got runs in Australia and England. So not that many, you know, arguments against picking him as one of the top batters. Actually, I was quite surprised to find him under the 50-run mark in terms of average. Really.
It's been a while now.
Yeah.
It's been a hot
Have you
minute.
Been on the internet in the last 4 years, Estelle?
Okay, so
I had people start emailing me about 6 months ago going, you can't put him in the book. I was like, guys, he's in the book. He's quite high up, actually. If nothing else, he's on the cover of the book. Like, it'd be quite a slide for him to suddenly not be playing at all. Sorry, Estelle. What have you got?
Yeah, she's got two in a row.
Yeah, I've got two in a row, and I will go with Aravind De Silva as my next pick.
Okay.
Averaging only 42.97, but the runs he got and the opposition he got them against at a time when, you know, Sri Lanka wasn't one of the better teams in the world, I think just elevates him. above Mahela, I would say, because Mahela, like Jared said, like there are a few question marks about where he's got his runs. Aravind has got hundreds in Australia. He's got hundreds in New Zealand, England. One of those guys who kind of really elevated Sri Lanka cricket. So I feel like he is talent-wise one of the top players Sri Lanka has ever produced.
So when we had the cricket writers dinner in England recently, and Nagraj was there, and he was like, just get trying to get me to, and remember, I was pretty drunk at this point, but he was trying to get me to go through the list. And when he worked out Aravinda wasn't there, he was so upset. And I said, but how do you put him in above other people who were just more consistent? Mm. Like, we know if it's raw talent, you could have him really high up this list, but it's really hard. So I had him on my very long list for this. I think it's just hard to fit him in just because of everything else. There is quite a bit in the book about him, though, because he's a fascinating player from that kind of point.
So I didn't have him on my list, not even my long list. But if you were to ask me to bet money on Estelle's five picks, I would have said one of them would be Aravinda. I think she's gone like the triple Aravinda in recent times, hasn't she?
No, I just feel like...
You never trip her Aravinda. I think we almost called Zachariah Aravinda, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That would have been great. Anyway.
No, I just think that if you look at Sri Lankan test batters, Mahela is obviously really high up in the list. But I feel like after Sangakkara, a lot of people would rate Aravinda as the second best test batter just because of where he got his runs and against who he got them and the period of time, right?
That New Zealand series really does stick out, doesn't it? Which is, I think, fair.
Way to rub it in, guys. The guy who picked Mahela as his first pick wants to kind of hide himself now, but it's okay. I can salvage myself later.
I still had Mahela higher in my list because 10,000 runs isn't a joke. And also, he was a fantastic player. But I think Aravinda was a better bat than Mahela. I don't think you could say he had a better test career, though.
Yeah,
fair.
Okay, now I'm stuck.
Roy Dias.
So many obvious...
Arjuna Ranatunga.
Obvious choices. And
actually,
you like a few of these players.
I've been for like a couple of episodes, right? Where I should have picked him. Maybe that Jared wasn't here. Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps. But there's this one player on my list who you are like a fangirl of. Why are you not picking him?
I don't know who you're talking about. You always give me hints, Behram, but I don't
know. Yeah, she never gets your hints ever. I think your hints make it worse for her.
Oh, no. I know who you're talking about. I didn't pick him on purpose.
Okay. Pick him. Do it.
No, I'm not doing it. No.
Come on, Estelle. What do we got?
Okay. Let me go with... again, this is going... You guys are going to criticize me for this. I go with Virendra Sehwag.
That's a pretty good one. I had him pretty high, actually.
Yeah, he's averaging just under 50. So 49.34. And I think he doesn't really... Like, a lot of the average viewers don't really rate him that high when you consider the legends India produced during that period. But he was such a match winner, right? And such a guy that could have such a huge impact on a game. So I would rate him really highly. And I think I've picked him as opener in many, many teams now on Cricpicks. Just a great player and a guy who can really have an impact on a game.
I had Sehwag at 6.
I had him at 7.
Ooh. Yeah, so I had him really, really high. And I mean, he's got 8,586 runs. He's played 104 test matches. He's also averaging like in the 49s, 49.34, which is probably what elevates players in my list, I suppose. But two triple tons, right? You can't look past two triple tons either.
Also, just the strike rate. The strike rate is so ridiculous that it's worth probably 5 runs on his average. And I don't think people quite understood that. But when I was talking to, especially when you talk to bowlers of that era, they're just like, you have no idea what it was like to go up against him because you didn't know. Rahul Dravid speaks brilliantly about like what Sehwag would do to the opposition. Definitely a little bit like Mahela. I mean, he made runs in Australia and South Africa, but there were... clearly issues with his batting as well.
He was terrific in Australia, though. That's kind of part of his legacy.
But once he got going, I think his biggest thing was sideways movement. He didn't mind pace and bounce, but genuine sideways movement caused him a problem. He's not the only attacking opener in the history of cricket who's had that. That's quite common. Like, Warner has that, Hayden has that. There's a few of those guys. So I'm willing to say that's the payoff. If you're going to score that quickly, it means that England and New Zealand specifically might make you struggle at times.
Okay, that brings us back to you. Yes.
Okay, I am going to go with someone who I think is, I don't want to say underrated as a batter, but because of who he became in many different ways, we don't talk up his batting enough and he gets made fun of a lot. But Geoffrey Boycott was, for a long time, one of the best batters in the world. And it was surprising to me to go back and realize he didn't average 50. He feels like he should have averaged 50. There were so many things that were said about him. A, he ran out most of his partners, which is all the way through every old cricket book I ever read about batting. It was just Boycott stitched up everyone. The numbers don't quite back that up, by the way. He does have a few run outs, don't get me wrong. But the numbers don't quite back up that. And then the other thing was that Tony Greig always said he dodged fast bowling. I didn't really see a case of that as much as Tony Greig made. But there's no doubt that Boycott missed some series. And he was obviously, he was a rebel cricketer. There's the domestic violence thing. There's the casual racism thing. There's the flagrant misogyny thing. But purely as a batter, I don't see how he doesn't go very, very high in a list like this because he was almost impossible to dismiss.
How much is he averaging? Probably like 48. Got to be close
to
50.
High. I think it's slightly lower than I thought because I would have thought if it was, I would have thought it would have been 48, 49 and it's if it wasn't 50. And it's 47, but it's 47 over 108 tests with 8,000 runs, which is not something that a lot of people had played in that era. But if you go through his record, he averages 45 in Australia, 47 in India, 82 in Pakistan, 49 in South Africa, and in the West Indies, it's over 50 as well. Like, it's a really solid resume. There aren't many places. He didn't make runs in New Zealand, weirdly. He only played 5 tests there. But it's a really, really solid resume, all things considered. Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are analysing every part of our game. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts, and articles on what is really happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket8.com is your place for cricket intelligence.
Yeah, no, I think he definitely deserves to be on this list. And that means that I have 2 picks now. And I'm going to change my strategy a bit. Opening batters, because it's hard for opening batters to go an average 50 plus in test cricket, right? For my 3rd pick, I'll go Alistair Cook. He scored 12,472 runs in 161 test matches at an average of 45.35. 33 tons, which is a lot, plus the opening batter thing. I have a left-hander bias as well. And he has scored the most runs by a batter in test cricket with an average of under 50. So, I mean, he surely has to make it, right? Plus, terrific in Asia.
I had him a lot higher than you guys had him. And what you said about the openers, I just went with Boycott for the same reason. And there's 2 other openers, I think, that also deserve to be on this list for the same reason. They are batters who should have averaged 50, but they open the batting, so they don't.
Yeah, fair enough. And I mean, Alistair Cook was obviously really good at home, but one thing about him was that he was so, so good in Asia and he was such a good player of spin that also kind of, you know, elevates his status on this list. But anyway, I'm just going to go
say, just like you predicted that Jared's first pick would be WG Grace, I knew you would pick Alistair Cook.
I have picked him a lot, haven't I, on Crick Picks? I think I'm always
picking. You like England,
Cook.
Don't you?
I think
that era of the English team.
So when I was in England living with Jared, I met Nathan Johns. Have you ever met Nathan Johns, Estelle? And
no.
The guy who covers Irish cricket.
Irish guy, right?
Yeah. So he has like the most perfect face cut in the history of cricket media. And he's basically the Alistair Cook.
Not a very
of
high bar,
media.
By the way.
Yeah.
Not a very high bar.
Alistair Cook also has like the perfect face. And it's like if Alistair Cook was a journalist, he would be Nathan Johns. exact same features.
I don't think Alistair Cook. I think there's another left-handed opener that should have gone ahead of him. But anyway.
I'm picking him up next.
No!
Yeah, of course I have to. This is my strategy. I said it before and I'm going Graham Smith for my pick number 4. 9,265 runs in 117 test matches. He averaged 48.25 and he was an opening batter in South Africa. That is worse than being just an opening batter, right? 27 tons, which is the 3rd most for South Africa behind Kallis and Amla. And I mean, sure, he had that weakness versus left-arm pace and he was a bit of a bunny of Zaheer Khan. But, you know, this is the sort of guy who can even bat out there with a broken wrist. So there's a lot to love about Graham Smith and he was a leader. So yeah, I'm quite comfortable with this one.
Do you want the best stat?
Sure.
So he averages 41.5 in South Africa.
Okay.
Right. But what's his overall average?
48.25. So
So he averages over 54 away from home.
Wow. That is
we have not seen many players in the history of our game do that. That's why I have him ahead of Alistair Cook. I think Alistair Cook was fantastic as well. But just absolutely ridiculous away from home and would just grind teams, right? Like once he got on a roll, I think he struggles. He averaged about 36 in India and about 40 in Australia. So neither of them are terrible, but they're not exceptional. But like everywhere else is just ridiculous. And he played in an era where you played everywhere, right? Like he really did. You know, he averaged 67 in England, 57 in New Zealand, 45 in Pakistan and Sri Lanka as well, 70 in the UAE, right? Wow. Like just really, it's a phenomenal record. He made a lot of runs away from home.
What was his average in Australia?
39.
Okay. There and thereabouts.
Yeah, 200s, 350s. I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I think he struggled the way he batted. I reckon Australia and South Africa actually don't suit the way he bats because that little bit of extra bounce probably wasn't 100% what he wanted. And when he went to India, it would have just been probably Zahir Khan and off spin would have caused him some issues there. But it's such a solid record, all things considered.
I mean, if you in the modern day get an opener who averages 39 with a bat in Australia, you'd take that opener with both arms, right? Like, you wouldn't think twice.
Yeah.
So
these days, you'd be the best batter at the side.
Basically. Anyway.
All right, back to me. Okay. I'm going to go another opener since we're on a roll here. And I'm going to go Gordon Greenidge.
Yeah. He was also very high on my list.
Yeah. So his overall record is partly looks worse because he probably plays on a little bit longer than he should have. So I think I'm just trying to see here. He makes his debut in 74. Plays on to 91. And if you look at the last couple of years, he really tanks his average. Similar to what we've seen with Amla and with Kohli. I'd say there are two other players who probably play on just a little bit too long. And probably the last 4 years of his test career, he was just a very ordinary player. Up until that point, he wasn't. But he was just an absolute brilliant player. And he's probably one of the few attacking openers who really handled the moving ball quite well. So he didn't attack in the same way that Warner and Hayden and Sehwag did. But he is another player who, when he needed to attack, could score at basically a runner ball and just completely end a game, right, in an hour, hour and a half of batting. But also had the technique. And it's because he was a West Indian who was brought up in the UK and then went back to the West Indies to kind of finish his technique. And when I talked to Barry Richards about him, he said that it's the combination of the two with Gordon Greenidge that made him incredible because when the ball was nipping around, he could block like Boycott, right? Wow. And then when he wanted to smash you, he would become Viv Richards. And it's the gears that he had between those. And he probably plays, as I said, a little bit too long, but just didn't make runs in Australia or Pakistan, weirdly enough. But he averages 56 in England and 56 in New Zealand, 45 in India. But it's the impact of the innings that he had. Like once he got going, there wasn't, you know, he just took games away. So definitely an all-timer for me.
I mean, it's a mountain of runs as well. He's played 108 test matches. He scored 7,558 runs, which for an opener is a lot of runs. And he's averaging 44.72, which obviously, as you have explained to us, has plummeted in those last 4 years of his career. So
He's probably around a 46 to 48 average is probably where he should have ended up based on talent. And as an opener, that's worth 50, right?
Yeah. I was confused between, I had three openers in front of me, which were really high on the list in Graham Smith, Alistair Cook and Gordon Greenidge. But, you know, I thought I could speak better to the other two. And I think that was a good choice to make.
Next two picks are going to be Greenidge and Smith
Wild.
As well to finish things off.
Do it. Pick your boy, no, Estelle. Please.
No, I'm not. I'm not picking him.
But he has a solid case.
He does have a solid case. I don't know. But 1 second. I lost the... Okay. Let me go with... Hang on.
He's a 49er. You don't have a lot of 49ers.
Okay, you love the 49ers, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I'm a bit obsessed with the 49ers.
I'll go with Bill Laurie. As my next one.
Okay.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, he's averaging 47.15. He doesn't have as many runs as some of the other picks, right? It's just over 5,000 runs. But he's got a good record overseas. He's averaging 45 in England, 43 in India, and 52 in the West Indies. I am stuck for picks. So that's what I'm going with, my fourth one.
Okay. Look, he was a fantastic player. And again, like Boycott, isn't remembered the right way because of the commentary and everything, right? So he ends up being like the funny, loud guy on commentary. And at one stage, he was probably in the top two or three in the world at running between wickets. Like, just if you watch highlights of Bill Laurie, you like, he is so sublime to watch. Like, all of his shots are like checked drives and beautiful, like full twist of the hip pull shots. But most of the highlights are literally just him dropping the ball at his feet and running, right? Or pushing the ball into the gaps and running. Had maybe one of the straightest bats of any player in the history of Test cricket. There's a couple of funny things as well. He never went out LBW at Australia, which was often used against him. To be fair, even outside of Australia, he had a lower than average LBW rate. He had such a straight bat, very hard to do. He was known as the corpse with pads on, but a lot of that reputation comes from Tony Gregg making fun of him on commentary. If you go back, he's a slow batter, but he's not like a corpse with pads on. Mm-hmm. Mostly, when I talked to guys who batted with him, they said that he was brilliant to bat with because he would literally just get a single first ball of every over and get off strike, because that was his method of just like, you're not going to get me out. So he's fantastic. I had him a little bit lower down my list. Weirdly enough, I think is that in South Africa, he had two tours of South Africa where he didn't make any runs. Mm-hmm. And he struggled a little bit there. Having said that, one of those, I think he went over as captain. My issue though, Estelle, was he averages 56 in Australia and 39 away. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't quite hold. There's a lot of Australian players with great records. And you put Warner. I know Warner has the strike rate boost that Laurie doesn't. But you put Warner in that group as well. And I found it hard to work out where to put Laurie. So I had him a little bit lower, but not so much so that I think that's still, he's still a fair pick to be in the top 15, but he's probably more fringe top 15, I think, than automatic.
Okay, you've got your last pick, Estelle.
Okay, I've got another one. Another chance to blow it, yeah.
Another chance to pick your boy, your golden
boy. I told you I'm not picking him.
Your little puppy.
For those listening, he's talking about Michael Clark.
Yeah. I mean, they would have gotten there by now.
I don't think so.
If they've watched
I wasn't
enough.
Sure if you meant him or someone else. I thought there might have been another puppy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Okay. So I'm going with like Behram's theory of, you know, the higher averages, but not going with Michael Clark, but I'll go with Neil Harvey.
Okay.
She's gone with your prehistoric picks, Jared.
A prehistoric pick.
Yeah, she has.
Taken a leaf out of your book.
6,000 runs at an average of 48. Obviously, he's got a great record in Australia, 45, averaging 45. In India, 55. And 71 in South Africa. But I would assume that was not a great era for South Africa, was it?
No, they were probably starting to come through, but this is what's interesting about Neil Harvey. If you look at the start of his career, I don't know if you had a look at this, Estelle, but over the first 15 test matches or something, I think he's averaging Bradman's mark, he's averaging 80 odd. And for the rest of his career, it just sort of slowly comes down until he ends up under 50. And again, you look at the end of his career, he averages 24, 37, 26, and 48 in his last 4 or 5 years. So he would have averaged 50 if he just retired at a reasonable age. And he was probably a little bit burnt out because he started as a teenager and everything else. But why the South Africa record is interesting is they didn't have good bowling. They did have a great off spinner. And what we specifically know about Neil Harvey is he was a brilliant player against spin, partly because of how quick he was. There's some great photos and footage of him just being miles down the crease when he's playing spin, like a comical amount, right? We just like he must have almost started running before the bowler came in, right? And he was incredibly fast, and he did very well. So I think if you talk to Abhishek Mukherjee, and I've had this conversation, so I'm going to throw him under the bus. He will say that Neil Harvey is slightly overrated because he made so many runs against South Africa. But I'd be like, but if South Africa's best bowler was an off spinner and you're a left hander and you're carving up the off spin, and it wasn't the only off spinner. I think Sonny Ravindon really struggled with him as well. So I think it's okay. I think all things considered, he probably deserves to be on this list. It's just that he played on a little bit too long again, and so his average went down. He is also one of those players that no one really sticks up for anymore because, oh my God, what a grumpy bastard he turned into when he retired. So he was the main detractor of the Australian team from like 95 to 2007, right? Literally like, oh, this guy, Brett Lee wouldn't even get in our side, and Shane Warne, oh, you just got to use your feet to him. Oh, like, I promise you. It was great. And so when I started Cricket with Balls, the tagline of Cricket with Balls was, cricket blogs were better in my day, Neil Harvey. Like, and someone went up to him with a t-shirt of that and got him to sign it, right? Like, and he's just a famous old grumpy. But I do think he's a fantastic player. Again, I think I had him slightly higher than Bill Laurie, but very much in a similar position, both of those. I don't think he was a fantastic player and probably should have averaged over 50. Cricket media used to be pretty simple. Find your favourite newspaper, head to Cricket Info, and maybe a blog you like. Now just finding the best stories and writing is a huge challenge. You already have a job. You just want to read about cricket. Well, that is what the best of cricket is currently doing. They go out daily to find the newest cricket coverage and the best stories from any publication in the world. And when they can't discover what they want, they also hire some of the best writers to produce their own great stories. You can get the best of cricket via their website or on WhatsApp. They find cricket's best stories and give them to you every day.
Yeah, so after picking Harsha Mamla as her first pick,
I have not blown it.
Estelle has basically taken a leaf out of the Jared Kimber Quick Picks manual and sort of salvaged herself, I suppose. But that means that a lot of players are going to miss out as well.
It's funny that he hated that era of Australian cricket, because that's what I loved, right? So
he hates everything you love, Estelle. That's what you need to know about. It was just hilarious. Neil Harvey, he would just be like, at a certain point, you're just like, stop asking him questions. He's just going to flag them off. And it'd be like, don't get me wrong, he played with Bradman and Bill O'Reilly and Keith Miller, like, and he was great himself, and Arthur Morris. I'm not saying his era wasn't great, but it's like, do you know what's also great? The modern era. Like, let's just be honest and do that. And we'd be able to get this guy. This is how we get this guy out and all this sort of stuff. And he's like, just settle down, Neil. No one is saying that you guys were good. He played in the Invincibles. His legacy was completely secure. And he's like, nope, I hate everyone. And it was so much fun. Last pick for me.
Yep.
I think I've only got one choice here. I'm going to go Martin Crowe. Martin Crowe, definitely in another era, would have averaged over 50 again. And I know his overall average doesn't make it look like that, but he played in New Zealand wickets that were made to be friendly for Richard Hadlee, I think it's probably fair to say. But he was absolutely just a brilliant player, a bit like Gordon Greenidge, that probably the era brings down his average a little bit. So he ends up averaging 45.4. But if you look at his career, he started when he just wasn't ready. So he plays about 15 test matches when he's not when he shouldn't have been playing test cricket. And at the end of his career as well, the last few test matches, he drops off because he's knee injury and he can't throw the bat correctly the way that he wants to. Conquers reverse swing before anyone else.
Well, Seema Akram talks about it, right? That he was the toughest batter that he ever bowled to because he was the first guy to conquer reverse swing.
Yep. Averages, I think, he didn't play a great era of Australian cricket, but even so, he averaged like 65 in Australia, averages 40 in England, 50 in New Zealand, as I said, on not particularly friendly wickets, 46 in Pakistan against reverse swing. Sadly, we didn't see enough of him in all of the rest of Asia, because that was the one thing I think would hold against him. He only played three tests in India and he didn't make any runs. He didn't make many runs against Sri Lanka. But also, I think, I'm just trying to see his record against the West Indies. Averaged 45 in 7 test matches against the West Indies, and he went up against the West Indies.
Yeah.
Right? There's no hiding there. If you talk to players of the 80s, they put him on a similar level to sort of just below that sort of Alan Border, Javed Miandad. Like, on genius levels, they would say he's up in that Viv Richards, Alan Border level, but maybe not quite as consistent. But I think a big part of it was he probably started a little bit too early. But I think there was a 6-year period in his career, and I can't remember what dates it starts. It's not like a clear, but there's a period of about 6 years where he averages 58 in Test cricket.
Wow.
And so, you know, just absolutely brilliant and carried their batting when they really didn't have anyone else. Just a fantastic player.
Yeah, I mean, an average of 45.4 on those New Zealand surfaces that you talk about is more than handy. But what I was really surprised when I was looking up Martin Crowe's record was that he only played 77 test matches, which seemed far too low for a player of that caliber. So what went wrong over there? Did they just not play enough?
He retired early, mate. They didn't play enough. They didn't play long series and retired early. So once he's, he probably, because he was such a good technician and had so much time, he probably could have averaged 40 to 45 for another 4 or 5 years in test cricket. But his knees were gone. He was quite, you got to remember, he was a weird dude. I love Martin and like he was a friend, but he was a weird dude and he could kind of pick a fight in a phone book, a phone box, if you know what I mean. Like, you know, in a room of one, Martin Crowe would still be arguing with someone. And he was so famous in New Zealand. It was like Richard Hadlee, Martin Crowe and the All Blacks. Like those, they were all the most famous people in New Zealand, but Peter Jackson didn't exist, right? Russell Crowe, his cousin, Russell Crowe didn't even exist at that stage. Do you know what I mean? He was so famous. And he really handled the pressure badly. He had drinking problems. His leg went. And he probably just retired too early. Mm. Alex Tudor told me that he bowled to him in about 1998. So this is what, 4 or 5 years after he retired? And he was hobbling by this point, Martin Crowe. And Alex Tudor still said, I'm not sure I ever bowled to anyone much better than Martin Crowe, right?
Wow.
And Tudor bowled to Tendulkar and, you know, Ponting and all those sorts of guys. And he said, this guy like sort of hobbled onto the field with like, you know, one leg bent out and he could not believe how good Martin Crowe was as a player. And I think Crowe made 100 in some, you know, random charity game at that stage. So just, we were probably robbed of another few years of him cementing his legacy. And also the other thing that probably robs him a little bit is the 92 World Cup where he played that innings against Australia and then he played that innings against Pakistan and then they lost to Pakistan because of Inzi, but Martin Crowe wasn't on the field because the knees had already started to go by that point.
Yeah.
And Martin Crowe, when Martin Crowe talked to me about that, he was in tears. He was literally like, I stuffed up everything. Like I should have just gone out and stood at slip and captained the way I wanted to captain. And we probably win that game. And he was like, I think we would have beaten England in the final if we'd gone up against them. So and just a fantastic player. If you've never seen highlights, it is worth just going and Googling and having a look at Martin Crowe.
Yeah, I mean, he was on my list as well. And I'm glad you picked him because I knew that he was a mate of yours. Okay, now, so that leaves me with the final pick. And I could stay true to my 49ers philosophy and pick Estelle's puppy. But I won't do that. He's going to go unpicked in this podcast. I'm going Kevin Peterson for my final pick.
Other obvious Biram pick, right?
Oh, really? Peterson really, was it? I mean, I was a big KP fanboy when I was growing up, right?
You know that.
I love to watch him
the
back.
Hair. And,
yes, the blue hair, the skunk hair. He's also someone who can be a bit rough around the edges when it comes to his post-cricketing career because he is a divisive character.
And his actual cricketing career.
Cricketing career as well. Yeah, I mean, even the way he kind of, you know, got axed from the team was very dramatic, to say the least. But 8,181 runs in 104 test matches. So that's a lot of runs. He averaged 47.28. And he was the guy in that England team, right? He had it, as we say. And he was an absolute butcherer of pace and spin. I think what kind of elevates him ahead of many other players over here is the fact that, you know, he went to India and won that series with England and destroyed India at the Wankhede as well, from what I recall, Harbhajan in particular. He was an absolute monster, should have played more and didn't play more because of his own issues. But I think there were a few names over here and we'll go to our honorable mentions. But I had made my choice, you know, a couple of picks before that I'm going with KP.
He was in my top 15. I tell you, I had Mahela, Martin Crowe, Hashim Amla, and Kevin Peterson very similar. They're all next to each other on my list. So you can make claims for some of them to be higher because of everything else. But Kevin Peterson played in a very batting dominant era, him and Amla. And so I think you have to factor that in compared to Crowe, right? But you also have to remember with Kevin Peterson that he had a gear that Crowe didn't have. He had the ability to completely destroy things. And I think because of that, a bit like Gordon Greenidge, he wasn't always attacking batter, But when he decided to attack, it changed worlds. And so I would give him an extra one there. So I have no problem with him. And I think I had him 13th on my list.
He did well versus that Australian team as well, right? That counts for something. Yep. He was able to break their back, which wasn't an easy feat at all.
So but I anyway. Didn't have Michael Clarke on my long list, by the way.
Oh, I mean, he was there because of my 49ers obsession, but I mean, look.
I'm only mentioning it because you kept bringing it up. Again, he batted in such a great era. His peak is probably better than some of the guys on this list, but for so many years, he was really average. And what was just on Australian pitches, when everyone was averaging 50, he was averaging 44. Like, I don't know how to really, like, he should average 50 in Test cricket, Michael Clarke. And so, like, and I, and he doesn't. I don't know. I don't know where to fit him in. I found him really confusing in the book as well. But I loved his peak. But he also batted at 5, and you know he was quite happy to keep himself down the order and struggled when he went up the order. So I always find Michael Clarke very difficult. The other guys I've got, so two others I had in my top 15 that we didn't mention is Victor Trumper.
Okay.
Right, who is just, you know, he was batting like Sehwag 120 years or 100 years before Sehwag was. Only averages 39, but in an era when the pitches were still quite dodgy, but did it with a strike rate that wasn't really matched until Viv Richards came along. Like, just ridiculous. Rohan Kanai, which is another player who doesn't get remembered a lot, just a great player. And if you look at his record, there's a lot of guys in his era who average 50 who I don't think were as good as Rohan Kanai, right? I think he was a better player than a lot of them. Another great older player is Clem Hill, which is Victor Trumper's partner. The other two, and I'm very surprised one of them didn't come up, was Adam Gilchrist.
Yeah, I had him in my long list. Gilly was there. Yeah. It's just... tough one, man. There were so many other batters. Yeah. I still have so many names over here. Of course, Michael Clarke didn't make it. We all know that.
Well, I've got one more. Arthur Morris is the other one that I had.
Okay. I had some more modern, a mix of modern and 90s cricketers over here. So obviously, Michael Clarke didn't make it, but I had Graham Gooch because he had a great peak towards the end of his career.
Definitely.
I had Misbahul Haq, who was similar. Right? Started off not so great and then he averages 50 plus at number 5 and was like kind of a rock for Pakistan for so many years in between. Then I had VVS Lakshman in there as well.
Yeah.
Lots of runs, nearly 9,000, right? 8,781. Really, really good in Australia and averaged nearly 46. And Desmond Haynes on the opener quota, right? He was there and thereabouts. Average of 42.29, but still nearly 7,500 runs. And the last player on my long list was Ross Taylor. And I think he never gets mentioned on these things.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't even thought about him. I just remember I missed two from my list. They wouldn't have gone in the top 15, but Ranji was another one. And David Gower is another one. David Gower's record is really interesting when you break it down. And what about you? Roy Dias, Juna Ranatunga.
I did have Gower in my long list, and some of the others that Behram mentioned, like Desmond Haynes, but like Greenidge is obviously the better open of the two, right? So a couple of them. I had Rohan Kanai. Interesting one I thought was Herschel Gibbs, because he's like, his average is really good, but he doesn't really get spoken about much, particularly in a test team, right?
I think if you look at his record, because I looked at him for the book, because I think he averages 47 opening the batting.
Yep.
Wow.
But everywhere else he batted, he never made any runs.
Yeah, his overall average is 41.
On that openers topic, how do we feel about JL and Gary Kirsten? They're both averaging around 45.
Gary Kirsten, I had, when we did it by stats, when we did the top 50 just by stats, he was in the top 50. And like then the more you look at his record, I don't think he basically averaged 40 to 41 against everyone. And I watched a lot of him play, and I watched a lot of Syed Anwar. Like, he wasn't a better player than Syed Anwar, right?
Yeah,
like, and he's another person that probably, if he plays more cricket, Syed Anwar would be on this list as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I broke it down for Gary Kirsten, it really wasn't that impressive. He, you know, all things considered, it just looked kind of blah. And he didn't have a big impact. And then the other thing, this is a really weird one that I looked at. Gary Kirsten averaged, let me see if I can find this here. It's not the one I was looking at. But yeah, Gary Kirsten, he has a similar kind of record to Graham Smith, but without the but without the sort of the top end domination. I don't think it was in wins. Yeah, so he averages 58 in draws. So his biggest impact was in the draws by a long way. I think he was a very good player. He probably should be on our long list as well. He should have been on mine. I think I forgot about him in the end. But I just don't think he impacted games the way that, like, you know, he was less impactful. You don't remember with Alistair Cook, right? He's very similar to Alistair Cook, except that every now and again, Alistair Cook would have a series where he would win a series for England. Yeah. I don't know if I feel the way with Gary Kirsten.
Hmm. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Chris Gayle is another one.
He's got two triples, really interesting. I think he's a fantastic player.
Two triple tons as well, so not a lot of people have that. I think it's just him and Sehwag, actually. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of players who we didn't even mention. Yeah. What about that New Zealand opener, Jared, who missed 6 years of his career? Was it Glenn Turner?
Glenn Turner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he averages in the high 40s as well, from what I recall. But yeah, let us know in the comment section below who you think we missed in our honorable mentions and our top 15. Jared, can we have each person's top five?
Estelle went first.
Hmm.
Hashim Amla, Aravinda De Silva, Virendra Sehwag, Bill Laurie, Neil Harvey.
Okay.
I went WG Grace, Virat Kohli, Jeffrey Boycott, Gordon Greenidge, Martin Crowe. Bayram went Mahela J. Warder, Inzamam Al-Haq, Alistair Cook, Graham Smith, and Kevin Peterson.
I think if I had gone Kohli over Mahela and kept Inzi where he was, I could have won this. I've messed up my first pick as well. I've gone the Hashim Amla route.
You may not have messed up your first pick the most.
But anyway.
It's better than Dilhara Fernando, right?
You can't keep saying that because it just points out that you have a problem.
Yeah. We should send you the first pick rehab.
I mean, I could point out that Behram picked Ramesh Raja in the top 15 commentators.
You could. It's not aged well at all. But anyway, you guys let us know who you think won this particular battle between us three. And thanks for watching this episode of Crick Picks. Of course, here's a quick reminder for all of you. You can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage, and that can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. We'll see you soon enough, next week, in fact, on another episode of the Crick Picks podcast. But that's all for today, folks. Have a good one and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bayram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.